This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs and topic program. Co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Tess and Nicola. Hello, ladies.
Good evening, Sue. How are you?
I'm great. Are you excited to be here?
Yes, thank you very
much
for having me.
Always. Nothing more exciting than being in the Joy studio ready to talk current affairs and women's stuff.
It's just a fantastic opportunity, isn't it, to have our voices heard.
It really is.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Yeah.
But we must reiterate that it's not just our voices, it's your voices too. So we're here to represent you and we're here to talk about what you want to talk about as well. So if you do want input, let us know. Later on this hour, we're going to be talking home birthing with Claire, who's a registered midwife and she's got 23 years experience, and with Jo Sexton, who is due to have a home birth in just a few weeks, and she is outside in the foyer area now, so we'll just keep an eye on her, making sure it doesn't happen right now. But I guess she's with the right person in the right place.
Well, that could be a joy birth, though, you know?
Ooh, we haven't had a joy birth.
No. Up on the roof. Be beautiful.
Bit cold, though.
A little bit cold. Because there are changes to the home birthing laws. There's legislation at the moment being discussed that actually could make home birthing impossible in the sense that basically they're using litigation issues to say that midwives will no longer be able to be registered to do it. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Yeah, in
your home. So it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It just means that you're not going to be able to get a midwife to do it legally.
Legally.
Now, that starts in July 2010. Now, if you do want to contribute to that discussion, please call us on 96992949.
Or you can SMS in on 0427JOY949.
Or email us on air at joy.org.au.
You know what I was reading? I was reading about this, this stupid idiot, because I'm just annoyed with people with this bigoted, narrow-minded view.
I can see it's getting to you. Yep.
I get really angry. Now, the head of the Australian Christian Lobby has labelled Australian gay soldiers destructive to unit cohesion and mateship.
What? So we're not allowed to be friends now? Oh, right, okay.
No, we basically they're saying that the gay soldiers will interfere with whatever mateship is because there'll be love and lust issues and relationship issues at the front line.
So a big organisation like the Australian Christian Lobby is asserting that gay men aren't able to be friends with one another. Gay men aren't able to be friends with their fellow soldiers without it being in some way sexual.
Well,
ridiculous.
Right. Surely then having women in the armed services then is also counterproductive to mateship. If you're going to look at it like that, the potential of sexual attraction mucking up that mateship, should there be no women?
Male and female soldiers working together?
Well, they're talking about this at the front line. So basically at the front line, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, but women aren't at the front line, are they? If you are in the army, can you please let us know if women are allowed at the moment? Now, I'm assuming, is this American? Or are we looking at Australia?
No, that's an Australian Christian lobby. I think it's quite funny that the Christian lobby is also deciding to talk about soldiers.
Yeah,
I don't know, Christianity, war.
What experts?
Truly.
But I don't think anybody should be at the front line. And really, that's not the issue at hand, is it? I mean, just because you are gay does not mean that you are going to do anything.
Or maybe they should just have small troops. You can have one lesbian and one gay man serving together because they're the only ones that won't be attracted to each other.
Let's do that.
I reckon we've got it sorted for the army there and the Christian lobby. They can't really object to that.
But remember, the important thing is that we win this war, right?
Yeah, no, funny you mentioned that. That's actually a direct quote out of an article that was actually mentioned on the news before. It appeared on the ABC earlier today and it's basically saying Obama's not got round to ending the don't ask, don't tell policy, which he talked about when he was doing his campaign. He's like, this is terrible, it's discrimination, it's going to end under my reign.
Yeah.
Basically it's not happening yet, and surely it's not that difficult to do.
Mm.
But he's kind of putting it off a bit. He's saying, I'll get round to it.
Yeah, well, he's saying it's actually, his quote was, it's not as cut and dried and as clear as people would like us to think it is, he said. So the question is, why not?
I reckon I've got the answer to that.
I'm looking forward to this.
I was reading a bit more into it, you know, and I don't mean reading tons of articles or law books or anything like that, but I was reading into what could the American government be frightened of? And I've got it. They've actually discharged about 12,000 people under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation.
This is male and female.
Male and female. And basically, if they admit they're wrong, are they liable? Can those people then say, hey, you discriminated and you've admitted you discriminated. We're going to sue the pants off you. America definitely can't afford that right now. So I'm wondering if there's actually...
Sued for a legal dismissal. That would be fun. 12,000 cases from America popping up here, there and everywhere.
Yeah. And, surely they'd be able to be paid out till the end of their service would be. So that'd be expensive.
And that makes sense in the sense that it's not cut and dried as clear as people would like to think it is. That makes sense because it's a money issue. Is it also then a vote issue? Is he getting, backing, saying, no, you can't do that because we'll take your vote away?
Oh, well,
let's face it, that's the basis of politics, isn't it?
But yeah, but there's not a campaign again for another good few years. Essentially, this is the perfect time for him to do it because he can make everyone forget about it with other things that are much more appealing to the people who'd be against it by the time an election rolls round. And, you know, gay people are quite good at remembering when people have been good to them. So, yes. You know, it'd probably work in both ways. Actually, it's the perfect time now, Obama. You've got about a week. Sort it out.
He has, but he says, I just want to quote this and leave it on this one. He says, we have a full plate. I know some of my best friends are deploying for a fifth time, and that's all 1 year at a time. It's a lot on their plate.
So that's a guy, Brian Jones, who spent 21 years in the army.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I like his diversion tactic, though.
It's quality.
He basically says, what we should be focused on is how we are going to win the war, which is what Tessa, this might be an issue, but how are we going to win the war?
Get our focus back to the big picture.
I don't know, but if you have, say, let's just say there's an extra 12,000 people in your army, and I don't really want to go to war. I don't like the whole idea of people dying for that. But wouldn't you think, hey, there's 12,000 extra people I can utilise? Oh, dear, they are attracted to same sex.
Yeah, don't ask, don't tell. Whoopsies, they admitted that they were gay and they're in the army. Out you get. 12,000 gone. We don't care if we go to war again.
Look, if they came down at my local gym, the fittest people in there are nearly all gay. So there you go. They'd be an advantage for the army by such a.
Look at us, we're strong and powerful, surely.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd get in.
What about the stereotypes of this latest Bruno thing?
Ah, Bruno. I'm sure that everyone has seen the plethora of ads on television and radio and everywhere for the new film Bruno, starring Sacha Baron Cohen. Basically, GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, the United States branch, has come out saying that Bruno reinforces negative stereotypes and decreases the public's comfort with gay people. Now, I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that's the gay community being far too sensitive. I think that stereotyping, as we were talking about earlier, Nicola, stereotyping is a form of comedy.
Yeah, I can give you an example. I, believe it or not, I'm Scottish.
Really?
Yeah, and there's a few stereotypes out there of Scottish people. Take Fat Bastard from Austin Powers or Groundskeeper Willie in The Simpsons. Well, they're not exactly, positive stereotypes of Scottish people. And, I don't think that they actually do anything to decrease the public's comfort with Scottish people.
But maybe we're taking it from a female point of view. Maybe we're saying it's okay because it's a male stereotype. What if we had a female stereotype? She had facial hair, hairy pits, hair on the legs. Let's go on the whole,
So funny because none of us look like that. I mean, if we did, it wouldn't be a problem, but none of us look like that. And I'm quite happy to make fun of perceptions of lesbians. I think it's hilarious, and I think we're all guilty of stereotyping one way or another. It's like the Avenue Q song, everyone's a little bit racist, everyone makes a little bit of fun of each other, and yeah, I think it's a perfectly valid form of comedy. It was interesting, they actually the makers of Bruno, Universal Pictures, I believe it was, actually invited members of GLAAD in to come and preview the film to kind of point out parts of the film that they might find offensive. glad obliged, and came in and said, okay, well, this part's probably a little bit dodgy, this part, this part, this part, and every single one of those films stayed in the film. So I thought that was a bit funny. Yeah. A little bit loose.
It's kind of token consultation, you know? Oh, could you tell us which bits you don't like? I don't like those bits. Oh, that's nice.
That's nice. But anyway.
Don't ask, don't tell. Exactly.
What about Chaz Bono coming out in a first public appearance?
Yes. Female to male transition son has come out for the first time since his transition and just made public the fact that the procedure had taken place and that he came out with his girlfriend and, you know, seemed perfectly happy with his decision and what he'd gone through with. And I just think it's absolutely fantastic when celebrities are comfortable enough to come out and into the public arena and share their story. I mean, they obviously understand how much of an impact their story can have on people in the community. Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting.
Very, very, very positive, because I still harp on about the fact that, you know, gay and lesbian people who try and hide their sexuality for public popularity, mm-hmm. it's so damaging to our community.
Okay. Entirely. And it usually comes back to bite them in the ass. I mean, I don't want to bring up any examples because it's so contentious, but celebrities that, you know, it slips out that they're gay and then they try and deny it.
It's like an oopsie. And our lives are not oopsies, are they?
No.
We're proud of who
we are. Not the others.
We're not the others. That is true. We're like the token is the little vegetarian section at the bottom of a menu. We are, you know. It is. It's like, by the way, same sex. Oh, by the way, lesbian. Or by the way, gay. It's just, it's not good enough. But we have celebrities who are standing up. I mean, they're role models for
absolutely. And to have a transgender role model, fantastic for the community, I think.
It is. I just want to talk for a minute about the toolkit for same-sex marriage. Now, there's just over 2 weeks remaining to make submissions to the Marriage Amendment Bill in 2009, and activists are stepping up for the push to encourage same-sex couples to tell their stories.
Fantastic. I think it's great. If there's a toolkit to assist me making a submission, to make a submission asking for marriage equality, it sounds like quite a mouthful, but it seems like all they really want are stories of gay and lesbian couples and you know, their life story together. I think it's great they've got a toolkit.
I'm going to admit to being a bit daft. When I first read same-sex marriage toolkit, I had this little picture of a booklet like, this is how to get married. No. Are
Step
you gay?
One.
Same-sex marriage for
and
dummies.
A little ring in it and stuff like that. You just go out and buy a kit, you know? DIY IKEA selling them.
Oh,
well, like when you buy a magazine and you get like a little free thing in the front, like ring included.
Lucky.
I love it. There are 16,000 submissions already made in support, which is fantastic. And there is an Equal Love launch party at 7 p.m. on Sunday, July 19, at the Exchange Hotel. Good evening. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We're going to be talking home birthing laws, and in the studio with us tonight is Claire, who's a registered midwife with 23 years experience, and Joe, who's due to give birth in how long, Joe?
A week and a half.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to rush this interview. Now, the recently released report of the Federal Maternity Services Review should bring huge breakthroughs in many areas of maternity care. However, there is a dark side to the report. The report proposes an end to women's access to midwifery care for home birth, except possibly within state-run services. We can go into a bit further into that later. If the report's recommendations are followed, home birth midwifery could become impossible in 2010 with the introduction of national registration of health caregivers. Claire Lane, could you just talk to us about your experience as a midwife?
Yeah, sure. I went through the nursing route in my day. That was all you could do. These days you can do direct entry midwifery. And you can do a three-year course that's solely on midwifery, but I had to go via nursing. And then I've also done a lactation course, so I have extra experience in breastfeeding. And I started working both in the public hospital system. I worked in the public hospital system for 20 years, and at the same time I did home birth. And I was very lucky because the public system where I worked supported me doing that, so they let me run off and do home births, which didn't happen very often. In the 20 years I worked there, I think I left 12 times maybe. It always just worked itself out. And 3 years ago, I started a group practice with three other midwives, and called Midwives Naturally. And I left the hospital system coming up 18 months ago to do home birth solely, only to discover that maybe come July next year, I might be out of a job.
Can you tell us a bit more about the legislation we're talking about?
Sure. What's happened is we've gone from state boards to this new national board, which is going to include not only midwives but nurses, doctors, chiropractors, everybody. I think there's about 10 professions that they're putting together, and there's one set of laws for everybody as far as I understand. And to be registered, though, you have to have indemnity insurance. Now, midwives who work in the community like myself lost our indemnity insurance through no fault of my own, I hasten to add. It happened through when the doctor's indemnity crisis happened, I think, in about 2001. And we were insured. We got our insurance through the Australian Nursing Federation, through Lloyd's of London, I'm led to believe. And they decided to pull the product because we basically don't, there's not enough of us doing this work to create a pool of money that they can then use to pay out someone if there's an incident. But as I said, I've been in this business for 23 years and no midwife has ever been sued.
How many midwives are doing the home birthing programs?
In Victoria, there's 30, and Australia-wide, there probably would be 200.
Yeah, Jo, just to bring you in here, I know this isn't your first pregnancy. You did give birth about 2 years ago, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
And it was also a home birth. Where did that decision come from?
I think when it took a long time. When I first fell pregnant, my husband and I, we were quite determined to have a natural birth, and we wanted to have a big say in how that would happen. And we thought about the idea of going to a birth centre, but by the time we sort of got around to it, they were pretty much booked out. We could have got into a couple of them down here, but in our chatting at the birth centres, it became really apparent that when you go into a birth centre or a hospital, you go into their rules and you have to toe the line to a degree. You're often given a certain amount of time to give birth, and if things don't progress well enough, then what they call the cascade of intervention happens ever so easily, and all of a sudden you're having a caesarean. And that was something that my husband and I really wanted to avoid. And we felt that the only way that we could really be heard and heard properly was when I met Claire. We were interviewing for the job and we interviewed doctors and we interviewed birth centres and we interviewed Claire, and Claire won hands down because she actually listened, and we'd made some odd decisions to do things slightly differently, and when that came up, then doctors would often have a big problem with me and basically dismiss my ideas as if they weren't thought through or well-researched. Or
I suppose people that are in some way against home birth, I suppose that's a lot of doctors out there at the moment, they would see it just as an unnecessary risk to have your baby at home without potentially, you know, support should there be complications in birth. What would you say to that?
I think complications can arise whether you have it at home or in hospital. And it's about having a team of people around you that know how to deal with those complications. So it's about being able to trust the person that you put in charge of your care. And when I spoke to Claire, and she actually listened to the way I wanted things to be done, and she listened to the reasons. And when she felt that I was being unreasonable, she'd say, "That's unreasonable, Jo." and if they weren't, then we could go ahead. Whereas when we spoke to doctors, it was their way or the highway.
Mm-hmm. Can I just add to that too? People very... most doctors have never, ever been to a home birth, and they basically have no idea what we do at one. I take equipment to a person's house. and I take the same equipment that is in any birthing suite in any hospital. I take resuscitation gear, I take gear to put in an IV, I'm skilled at doing that. I have skills to suture, I carry all of that equipment. I have drugs, I have the drugs to help if there was a hemorrhage. We have a backup booking for every home birth woman at a hospital. We have policies and procedures in place that if complications arise, not only do we know how to deal with them, but we also know how to transfer. So there are often signs that things, you know, are going to get complicated and you simply transfer to hospital.
Can you clarify then what low risk and high risk are?
Sure. That's interesting. There is actually a definition, but often it can change between doctor and hospital. Just depends what doctor you have and which hospital you're in. But the definition of low risk is basically a woman who has no major medical problems, so she's fit and healthy and well, and she's having one baby between 37 and 42 weeks, because that's what's considered to be normal, and the baby's head down, so it's going to come out head first.
Okay.
Okay, not likely to have any complications. But the thing with the risk tag is that someone who on paper would be defined as low risk can have every complication known to man happen, and someone who is deemed to be high risk can sail through with no complications at all.
Jo?
I'd like to say, I think, having given birth once and about to again, one of the most important things I found in the whole situation was to try and keep as calm and as relaxed and as comfortable as possible. And in that case, basically, your body is able to do it. Pregnancy is not a disease. It's a natural phenomenon. And if you allow the body to be able to take its course, most of the time it's able to do that. Where problems arise, often it's when the mother gets too tense or scared or feel, giving birth is also about being incredibly vulnerable. And if you can be in a place where you feel comfortable enough to be incredibly vulnerable, then the birth will generally go a lot smoother. Now, for some women, that might be in hospital, and for others, it might be at home. They should have the choice, and I think that makes a big difference in terms of the complications that occur during labour.
I think that's the point that we really want to get across, is that home birth may or may not suit individual women, but it's a point of choice.
Mm-hmm.
If this legislation goes through, mm-hmm. the choice will be taken away for women.
Yeah, that's right, and that doesn't seem to be appearing much in the discussion, is that this is supposed to be about women and their choice. But you've got to remember too that from the doctor's perspective, this is all about power, money and control.
I mean, there's not really a huge amount of solid research behind this other than
nope.
the loudest voice in the room.
That's right. The report that was written by Rosemary Bryant that set off this chain of events, the only reason that she gave for not including home birth in the changes that they were proposing was that it upset the doctors.
That's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
So they haven't said it's a financial constraint because of litigation possibilities?
They have said that because we're a minority, there's, I think, 702 home births occurred in Australia last year, and there's only, as I said, 200 midwives, that basically we're a minority and they don't want to spend the money, and we are in an economic downturn. But they spent $1 billion propping up the doctor's indemnity insurance to practice privately.
That said too, a woman has a right to have a caesarean and have it fully funded, and for no reason other than that she wants to and it's her choice, it's her body. Yet I'm not allowed to have a home birth.
No, not allowed.
And I fund it myself. I don't get any money from the government. I don't get any money from private health insurance. It'll cost me roughly around $5,000 to give birth at home. That's including pre and postnatal care. But it's a decision that we make based on what we think is best for our child and for us, and yet that's not allowed. But people can have the caesarean.
Do you think then that as a Western culture we're kind of brainwashed into believing that the hospital system is a safer place to be?
In this country, yes, but other countries around the world, no. For example, in the UK, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists and the Royal College of Midwives made a joint statement to say that there was no reason why a woman who was having a low-risk birth couldn't have a home birth. Now, this was a joint statement. So how come it's okay for the women in the UK to have a home birth, and it's you know, supported by the same group of people, of doctors there, but it's not, you know, what's wrong with Australian women?
But isn't that in the UK, really, the health system is so stretched that they're
have you looked at ours lately?
I know. The fundamental reason in the UK, I guess a driving force, perhaps, is that they're trying to outsource. I mean, could that be a reason as well?
Absolutely, yeah.
Monica Ducks wrote a piece in The Age today, an opinion piece about this very issue.
Mm-hmm.
She brings in abortion rights into the discussion. She says, just as adequate abortion rights are important for all women, not just those with unwanted pregnancies, so the fundamental right to birth in the way one chooses is an issue for all of us. And I thought it was actually quite interesting her bringing up abortion into the discussion. Just as an aside, if this legislation is passed, what worries me the most is that the home birth will not stop, but it might just be driven underground. I mean, we read awful stories about abortion when it's illegal in some other countries in the world. Just the lengths that people go to.
That's right. There's a rise in this country and in the US too, where they've tried to ban home birth in many of the states, a rise of a thing that's known here as free birthing, where you birth at home, yes, but you birth without the support or attendance of a qualified caregiver. So no midwives and no doctors at all. And we know that when that happens, that there are complications, and because there's no one there who can deal with them, you know, things can go horribly wrong.
You are listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We're joined by Claire and Joe this evening, chatting about home birth.
Claire, do you think the system, the legislation that is coming into place, has its positives?
Absolutely. Nicola Roxon has introduced changes that I have been waiting for 20 years. Midwives are going to be able to access Medicare. They're going to be able to order tests, write scripts. Lots of good positive stuff. But the thing was, they left out home birth. I'm not eligible for it.
So they're improving the services. You can employ a private midwife for the whole process of your pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. But you're not allowed to birth at home.
But you can't birth at home with the registered midwife.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that little portion, that tiny little you know, fundamental bit, then you can re-employ the midwife and they can follow your post-care, antenatal care, all that sort of stuff happens. But that small little matter.
The really small detail. Yeah.
It's interesting, they're legitimising so many aspects of a midwifery as a profession, but at the same time saying, you know, we don't trust you to actually do it in a separate environment, in a home.
When I first started midwifery, I came in on another review. There have been as many reviews as I've had hot dinners over the 23 years I've been a midwife, and every one of them has said, give midwives more, control over what they do. Let them be midwives. Now, Nicola Roxon is trying to enable us to do that, and as I said, I thank her for that. But she's left out home birth, and it's private midwives like myself who do home birth that are going to use all of this good stuff, and I'm not going to get a chance to use it.
And I'm hoping that by being driven underground, that women and children don't suffer, and that's what brings about the positive change. But talking about deaths, are there higher mortality rates for home births?
No, although to hear the media, you would think so. I've got some stats here that I got off the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare for 2008, and they are statistics taken in 2006. The statistics are always a couple of years behind the current date. And 708 women planned home births in Australia in 2006, and there were no deaths reported amongst these babies. Now, it gets very confusing reporting statistics. The doctors talk about mortality, but what they don't tell you about is morbidity. And then they go hand in hand. It's bad things that happen to mothers and babies. They don't die, but bad things happen to them. They very conveniently don't talk about those, because then they'd have to talk about all of the rising complications by doing cesarean sections, infection, rising rates of babies having to stay in special care nurseries, placentas that won't come away from walls of uteruses, and women die because they bleed. So they don't talk about those. And yet, poor breastfeeding rates, absolutely rising through the roof, postnatal depression rates. you don't see any of that in home. Well, you know, a little bit, but you don't see the morbidity in home birth
because it's such a minor number. I think it's about 35,000 births per year in Victoria. Is that approximately?
No, it's up. I just looked at the figures today. 2006 are the figures that we have, and it was nearly 70,000 babies in Victoria.
Oh, 70,000 now. Goodness me. Oh, since my time.
Nearly. Yes, it's gone up.
Joe, Do you get nervous at all about having your baby at home?
No. I think I'd be more nervous going to hospital to have my baby, and that's because of a lot of the reasons that Claire just touched on. Then, I think that the home birthing is an incredibly safe option. There's a big difference between home birthing and free birthing. And free birthing is when you don't have any professional help, and I would be very nervous about doing that. But having a home birth, I have a main midwife and I have a backup midwife, so that when the baby's born, there's a midwife for the baby and a midwife for me. And I trust, I get to know them throughout the process, and I trust their knowledge. By going to a hospital, I would be very scared of that cascade of intervention and losing my right to say yes or no, and not being able to focus on just birthing my baby. I'd have to focus on making sure I was heard as well as birthing my baby. And quite frankly, it's hard enough to birth a baby.
Yes.
Sounds like a...
I hear you, sister. When I talk to women about home birthing, a lot of the stories come about fear and that sort of thing, but they also talk about the siblings of the to be born or the being born child. And a lot of siblings don't react well to seeing mum in pain. Others celebrate it and love it. But I have personal experiences that some siblings have had issues with seeing their mum and get quite distressed.
We have a plan. My son's Oscar, and he's 2, and he's gorgeous, and I'm biased.
Hello, Oscar.
Hi, Oscar.
Hi.
And we have a plan for him. At the birth, my dad's going to look after Oscar, and if Oscar's comfortable in the room, Oscar gets to stay in the room, and if Oscar's not comfortable in the room, Oscar doesn't have to stay in the room. But going on what Claire has advised me, basically the children in the room look to the adults in the room and take their cues from them. And if they're happy and comfortable with what's going on, then the child generally is quite happy and comfortable with what's going on. I have a number of friends who've had home births with their other siblings, or the other children there, and they've said it's been some of the most incredible experiences, and it really helps that child understand where this baby's come from. It hasn't just sort of appeared out of nowhere, and understand the process of mum's belly being big and now it's flabby. And
Oh, Claire?
As a midwife, I've had lots of experience with children at birth, and I have to say I've never had a bad one. What we do is we have a talk with the parents. They know their child best. So you've got to be flexible. You've got to have lots of plans, plan A, B and C, depending on daytime, what's going on. And sometimes, too, it comes down to the mum. She might think she wants the child there, and then on the day she can't actually separate herself from the child to focus on birthing this child. So you've got to have, you know, as I said, plans in place to cover all of those contingencies. But children, the biggest thing with kids is they don't have our fear. They don't have our learnt fear mechanisms yet, and they do take their cues from the people around you. So if they look, you can see them. Mum goes, you know, into a contraction. They look at the adult face. If the adult face is happy, then they're happy.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes sense. Claire, have you ever had somebody approach you really keen on having a home birth, and you discuss it with them, and it becomes apparent that maybe it's not the best option for them? Have you ever had an experience like that?
No, women are really well informed and they do their homework. So when they come to me, they come to discuss options. I suppose what I have done in the past is if they're trying to decide between the option of maybe going for a birth centre birth for their first and then maybe looking at home birth for their second, but they like the idea of home birth, I listen to them and ask them questions, and then might say to them, look, actually, that sounds like a really good plan for you guys. I don't ever tell women what to do. I give them lots of information, and I can advise them if they ask me for my opinion, but I always say to them the choice is theirs.
Joe, you wanted to make a point?
I think most women who consider the option of home birth are generally a lot more informed than those that don't. So I think
just
by the time...
Just presume that they will be going to a hospital.
Yeah, well, I think the majority of women do think that that's their only option and that's what they have, and that's... And I don't know where that comes from. My only guess is that it's from the doctors thinking that they're the only ones that can actually do the job properly. But most women who consider the idea of a home birth are generally a lot more informed than the others because they've researched both sides, should I or shouldn't I?
Mm.
And whereas most people who go to hospital never really consider any other option.
With the changes in legislation, if they come through being in 2010, is there anything that we can do about it now, Claire?
Absolutely. There's lots of campaigns that are going on. If people want to join in, they can go to maternitycoalition.org.au or Home Birth Australia. I think it's .org.au, you can Google, and you can write your local member, you can make an appointment to go and see your local member, you can write to Nicola Roxon, and just put forward, it can be as simple as a one-page, you know, letter, just outlining an experience, maybe if you've had a home birth, or if you're looking at it from, we were saying before today, the lady in the newspaper saying that it's actually a cause for all women, then if you're looking at it from the feminist perspective of this is a, you know, a woman's issue and you want to get involved, then yeah, start writing and start, you know, rallying.
There is a rally at the start of September,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, in Canberra.
On the 7th.
We're all going up and we're actually maybe thinking of dressing as suffragettes and chaining ourselves to the, you know,
that's
to the
gate. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And Joe, you'll be there with two babies in tow.
With big T-shirts that say "I was born at home."
We're actually hoping that maybe someone gives birth on the lawns or something, and we can, you know, do it in a tent
and show them how it's
done. Yeah, show them how it's done.
This is what happens when we can't have home births. We
yeah,
do it in the grass.
Just, yeah, grass. Yeah.
I really do hope that women and children don't suffer because of this. And I do see the positives in the legislation. Is there anything in particular, Joe, that you'd like to see in the future?
I think Oh, there's lots of things I'd like to see in the future.
That's your chance.
I think it would be really lovely for women to be encouraged to make good, honest, informed decisions about their health, particularly with regard to this sort of thing. I think so often if you go down the normal line and you get your obstetrician or you go to your hospital, you get a lot of the picture but not the whole picture, and you're not aware of a lot of so-called alternative ideas that can help and aid you throughout your pregnancy. And I think that that's really lacking, and I think that's something that could make birthing so much more beautiful for most people, because so many people at the end of the day think what a barbaric and horrible and horrific and how horrible, oh my god, the labour pain, whereas for me I think back to my first birth and think, oh, it was magical, it was just incredible.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Right, we had a different experience.
But I mean it could indeed be a cloud with a silver lining if there's enough support that gets behind fighting against this proposed legislation. I mean, midwifery and home birth is now actually getting quite a bit of coverage and attention.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And awareness.
Yeah, it never hurts. What do they say? You know, no publicity is
bad
publicity. So, yeah, it's out there and it's getting a lot of airplay, and that's really good because this is a fundamental issue as far as I'm concerned. You know, this is about choice and this is about women. And what I'd like to see is women actually being put back into the centre of care, and I'd like to see midwives standing right beside them.
I want to thank you, Joe and Claire, because the issue here is that home birth isn't for everyone, but like many issues faced within the GLBTI community and often women in general, it's not about whether the choice is right for you, it's about choice and freedom to choose.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.